It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Yeah, they're doing something across the street, I think involving cutting down trees. But because of the position of the kitty condo, it was really hard to open that window. So I'm not closing it just for us to do this. And especially because we got to do 2 hours, so it would get really hot. So hopefully it just won't be a thing.
Okay.
I guess we'll find out.
We will.
All right. Also, I think I'm going to do this as a Mad Libs episode. So, greetings, salutation, everyone. welcome to the adjective gerund form verb noun. I'm male name. Oh, sorry. The only podcast in the region or place that verb, noun, frequency of time. I'm male name.
AKA backwards pants. And I'm William, and this is episode...
No, you're also male name.
No, I'm not going to do... I'm not going to do it. Because, first of all, I would just totally get lost.
And this is episode number. That's as far as we had to go. Just the intro.
No, I can't do that, because then you'll get mad at me. I've got one job, you always say. So I have to know what the number is.
Yes, but...
And if I put the effort knowing the number, I'm going to say what the number is.
But you did... You're saying the number instead of doing the Mad Lib thing, so I'm going to get mad at you for that. I am constantly amazed that people attempt to find ways for me not to get mad at them, because you can't win. It's not that's not just you. That's everybody. A friend the other day implied I was kind of judgmental. I was like, huh? I'm constantly judgmental. You're usually the person who points that out to people. How did you miss it this time? What is going on? Why is this a surprise? Anyway, what
385.
All right. And he doesn't have to be William. If you want to call him something else, that's fine. It's your Mad Lib.
Like Death Hour.
Death Hour. Sorry, my sick wife is texting.
Oh. I'm sorry to hear she's ill. Does she need something?
No, she had to show me. Oh. Pictures. So, we come home normally from work on Thursdays to get here and get ready for the podcast. And I clean off this chair. I set up the computer. I set up all the other stuff. Trish, generally speaking, clears off your chair.
Oh.
There's a history to this. It's because there's always stuff on your chair. That's kind of where we just toss stuff coming in and out. Frequently, most of it is hers. So she kind of originally sort of felt an obligation to do that. And then, so it became a thing. And I would ask her, I was like, you know, are you going to clean up William's chair? Because if not, then I would need to do it. She'd say yes. But then there were a couple times where she couldn't for whatever reason. She had to do something as soon as we came home. I don't remember. Something like that. So then I asked her again, not long ago, a few weeks ago. And I was like, so are you cleaning off William's chair? And she's like, yes. And she seems kind of mad. Mm. And I'm like, okay, I'm just checking because you aren't always able to. And it's we've had things like this before. In her head, it's a nag or it's a like an implying that she wouldn't do it if I didn't bug her about it,
sure,
or whatever.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, I won't do that anymore. That's fine. And then a few minutes later, she says, weirdly, if you just said, I'm assuming you're clearing off William's chair, I'd be fine with that. And I was like, well, that works, because mostly I'm trying to give you an out in case for some reason you're not. She's sure. Like, okay. So I've been doing that from now on.
Okay.
So tonight, Trish is sick, and she's in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I text her, and I say, I assume you're clearing off William's chair. And she texted back and said, sure. But she didn't. I cleared off William's chair, for the record.
Trish.
There were things on it.
Why did you say you were going to do it?
She doesn't listen. So, yeah, for those of you just joining us for the first time, go on the website and you'll probably figure out what most of the words were normally in the Mad Lib. But anyway, here's how the show works. And pay attention, because I'm not telling you next week. It's a two-parter.
Ooh.
And I don't tell you in a two-parter. You have to come back to this part for it. So, if you tried to start next week's episode and couldn't figure it out and came back here, here's where you should have been.
Here we go.
So, here's how it is. We have a hat in that is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, literate people, people with an internet connection, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, things like that. Little ones. Little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its adjective, servants, draw the note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't that, which is most of it. So,
yep.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Finally a nice day today. And it looks like it's going to be a nice day for a while.
Yeah,
like, not the same day, but...
I probably should have gone outside, but I was too busy. I'm helping. I think I talked about it before. A friend of mine from way back, she's writing a book, and I'm helping her.
Yeah.
Out. So that's been taking up most of my time. There's been all kinds of other things going on. We watched season 7. Okay, so we signed up for... some app that lets us watch HBO on our PS4 or whatever.
Okay.
Because my wife wanted to watch the 7th season of...
It's probably HBO Now.
Yeah, something like that. And so she wanted to watch the 7th season of Game of Thrones because I mistakenly thought it was the last season. I don't know why I thought that.
No, they still got one coming, yeah.
Yeah, they got one coming. Also, I mistakenly thought it just aired, but it aired a year ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So anyway... Totally wrong about all that. But she wanted to watch it, so we did. So now that we've got it...
So you're caught up now with
yeah,
the rest of the world.
That's right. Interestingly, we were just before I left, my wife was watching this YouTube video. A guy who's a writer and he does videos about writing and storytelling was talking about how he loves that show. And, you know, he thought it was great, but the latest season was a little bit of a disappointment. Now, I've watched this guy's videos before. He's a writer. He's 1,000 times smarter than me. And he said a lot of things in this video that I understood, but a lot of stuff I didn't understand. Like, for example, when we watched season 7, we noticed it was having some problems. Season had some problems. And what this video was saying, and a lot of other things we've seen, most people notice these problems. Some of the problems people notice, though... are things that I thought had been problems since it started. So, but this guy said he's read the book, so maybe reading the books makes a difference in how you...
Well, and there
show.
Is a factor, because I think it's the last two... Season 6 and Season 7 are based on what George told them was going on in the books, potentially. I don't even think it's that. He told them what was going to happen in the books, and then they decided to do whatever the fuck they want, which may or may not relate to the books. But he's been... They've passed the point that the current published books are
right.
A couple seasons ago.
Well, this guy mentioned that might be a problem. Might be part of the problem.
Yeah.
But, and I noticed problems in season 6 also, by the way.
I did not.
Well, with how characters were acting and how the plots were going. And it seemed
yeah,
like,
I didn't notice that
This
at
doesn't
all.
Seem right. This doesn't seem how these things usually work. Anyway. So, you know, once again, I'm baffled as to... what people are seeing in this show. And I don't say that to set myself up as smarter than other people, because like I said, this guy...
Don't worry, nobody listens to this podcast. Thinks
this guy, Jazz, you know, these people are all smarter than me, and they're getting things out of this show that I'm not getting, so it's obviously my problem and my deficiency, whatever it is, but I don't really get it. But my wife is still enjoying it, so we're watching it.
Jazz is a very even-handed, rational person, except when it comes to Kit Harington. Very few people knew she kidnapped him for like 2 months back in the...
I see.
The aughts.
But, and I don't know if we're going to keep
this... He was
this,
a kid then. It was kind
of
creepy.
...service, because we've got one of those 30-day trial things.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went ahead and watched the second season of Westworld.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not as good as the first season. Really, really depressing, actually. And, I mean, in a bad
That's
way.
That's impressive, because the first season was pretty depressing.
Well, not depressing in an... In interesting
oh, the quality any... of it is depressing. You don't mean the narrative.
yes, a little bit the narrative, but it's a very pessimistic, not in an interesting way, just in a, you know, just depressing way.
We keep forgetting it exists.
So there's that. And we watched the first season of True Detective.
Oh, okay. The good season, in theory.
Which was quite good. And now we're watching the second season, which is like
the bad season.
It's a whole different show. It's like...
Yeah.
It's like, it's not, it doesn't even seem like it's made by the same people. I mean, not a whole different show in the sense that, like, Fargo, you know, you go from one season and the next season's different people. You still feel like it's the same people telling the story.
Yeah.
This, it's different cast and everything, that's true, but it feels more different than that. It feels like it's not even the same people making it, but it is the same people, but it doesn't feel like it. But anyway, it seems like there was some other HBO show.
I was very excited for, season 2 of True Detective for a little while, even though I had not seen season 1 before it came out, because my wife had told me that apparently the two main characters in season 2 were going to be Vince Vaughn and Will Ferrell.
Oh,
and I was really intrigued by what the hell that was going to look like.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for a few hours I was like, dude, we might have to get into this. And then she's like, oh, no, it's Colin Farrell.
Colin
and I was
Farrell,
like,
yeah.
Then I absolutely do not give two shits.
Colin Farrell does okay in it. But you're right.
But
Will Ferrell
whatever.
Would be more interesting.
That I'm like, yeah, that sounds like people they would cast, and I don't give a damn. But Vince Vaughn and Will Ferrell in True Detective, I'm like, I at least got to see what that's about.
Vince Vaughn's doing an okay. Everyone's doing an okay job. It's really the scripts just aren't, I don't know. Anyway, we thought we would watch some other HBO stuff just in case, but...
You might want to check out Insecure. I've been meaning to check that out.
We've seen promos of it, and it looks good.
I've been meaning to check that out. Because that feels like another one that I can learn from, and that also is apparently funny. But it sounds like it's got an accurate alternate perspective.
Well,
in a way that I think would benefit me.
One thing, of course, we're thinking about is, well, are we going to keep this? You know, are we just going to pay for this every month? And I don't know. I mean, there were two shows that we really wanted to see, and the third show that we kind of half-hearted watched was okay in the first season. Most of the other stuff that is on offer there doesn't really thrill us.
There's
that much.
There's some good comedy specials, but Netflix kind of has that market cornered these days.
Well,
so
and also if we're patient, just about anything we do get the disc service of Netflix still.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If we're patient enough and we don't mind waiting, everything we possibly want to watch is going to be available on Netflix at some point. Now, the streaming service isn't as cool as it used to be or as extensive as it used to be, and that's unfortunate. But like I said, we still get the disc service. And when you look at HBO, it's... You know, they'll have new movies sometimes for a limited time, but not all the new movies.
No.
And then...
A lot of stuff comes through, but it's a matter of timing. Oh, yeah. Been wanting to see this, and there it is. In fact, we just paid like $6 to see Three Billboards on Amazon, and I'm pretty sure next month it's showing up on HBO.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And, you know, it would be different if like every single show they had was a show we liked to watch, you know, like, but just a few shows that we like, so I don't know if we'll keep doing it, but... So yeah, there was that. You know, and I've been working on a lot of stuff, but
you're fighting a chainsaw. You should definitely keep up on.
Right, not much else really to talk about that would interest anybody. What? How's your week been?
Not much to talk about either. TV's not working at the moment.
Oh,
it's a problem we had before, and Trish figured out how to fix it, and it involves essentially resetting it.
Mm.
But resetting it involves. Somebody has to hold down certain buttons, unplug it, and plug it back in while still holding those buttons, while somebody else does some things with the remote and stuff, and so I have to wait till Trish's back for that to work. I got another lesson in my age, because Trish left, And I spent the weekend just living it up. I was eating all sorts of crap. In fact, specifically, I dropped her off at the airport and immediately went to Five Guys in Cedar Rapids and got like two big old bacon cheeseburgers and fries and stuff and brought it home. But just eating all sorts of garbage. And then just, you know, if I was tired, I took a nap. If I wasn't tired anymore, I got up, no matter what time of day it was or whatever. I think Saturday I took three naps. So, yeah, by Sunday night, I feel like I've got the plague. Like, I'm bloated, I'm exhausted, I'm disgusting. Can't do that shit anymore. That used to be my jam. Like, oh, yeah, they make chili cheese dog pizza? All right, I'll take a 22-inch version of that. That'll carry me through Saturday. And then, yeah, I'll just sleep whenever. Yeah, you can't do that anymore. I'm too old for that crap. But after tomorrow, I will successfully have gone to the gym every work day in July. Mm. There will still be more work days in July, but I won't be working them. I'll be on vacation. So all the ones that I actually go to work, I went to the gym all of July. So I'm pretty pleased about
that. Are you still watching Supernatural?
I am. We're creeping up on the end of the first season.
Yeah.
We had the second episode with Meg.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe I remember some of that.
We also had one of the rare episodes of It's Not Supernatural. It's just shitty, shitty people. which I feel like should have been more traumatic than it was. The whole thing, though, it's showing its age in just so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I know later there's some, like, recurring and stuff, but I'm like, it's 15 seasons. 15 22-episode seasons. Is it really just the two of them?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that get old?
Well, I mean, okay, is it
They're
really just
the two
of them?
They're not that interesting of characters.
Is it really just the two of them? There are other people introduced for, you know, several shows, but it's mostly, yeah, just the two of them. And, yes, it does get boring, which is why we don't watch it anymore. I can't believe anybody still watches it.
How far did you get?
Well, as interested viewers, probably season 6 or 7.
How far did you actually get?
I think we might have stuck it out to season, I want to say 9, maybe? And not the whole season, just like a few shows, and we're like, yeah, this is just not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. I'm actually at the point now where I kind of look forward to going to the gym the next day to see it. And especially if I'm at the halfway until, like, the next, it'll have the second half. I'm at the point where I'm like, oh, I want to see how that turns out.
Well, their first
and that's a change.
Their first big 6-season arc was so interesting.
That was 5-season arc.
5 or 6, I don't remember. But it's so interesting and engaging. It will keep you going. The very next season after that, it's the right in.
They take a hard left.
Well, it's recycles previous stuff, really. So you know right away that okay, they're done, because if they're just going to basically do the same thing they did 2 seasons ago, except a little bit different creature, or a little different people, then you know that they don't have any place else to go. And so we watched that season, and I think maybe one more season after that, just to see if they'd figure it out, and they weren't, so we quit.
Did you ever watch Gene Roddenberry's Earth Final Conflict?
No.
It was a science fiction show that supposedly had been a thing Roddenberry had been thinking about for a really long time, and I want to say he died before it actually came out, but it was his baby originally. And the initial premise is that aliens showed up and they're cool, and they're like, here, I'm gonna give you all this cool new technology and shit, and it'll be awesome, and like, we love you guys, and that's wonderful. And then it turns out there's, like, kinky shit, potentially. Like, there's a lot of mysterious stuff going on with these aliens we don't know about. And it's all through the perspective of, basically, they created these human liaisons where they said, hey, we're going to put this thing in your head that makes you super smart and also makes it so that you can control this bioweapon that we hook to your arm. And you'll be, like, our escorts and bodyguards while we're on this planet. And so this is all from the perspective of one of those guys.
Okay.
Kind of interesting, not enough to hold me, but as usual, you know, as years go on, I look up what happened, and it had 5 seasons.
Wow.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Yes. The first 3 seasons were the plot line I just told you. And I mean, you know, things happened. But it was that story arc. The fourth season, the guy playing the main character left the show. So they basically created his son, who had been cloned and was part alien and shit. And he showed up and is just a brand new actor. And then that season, fourth season, they wrapped everything up with this new guy. And, you know, I think we had a Jesus metaphor. I think, like, he died, but then everything was good or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the fifth season, the intro is basically like, so, yeah, all that shit happened before. And then the aliens all left. But then that drew the attention of these other shitty aliens. And they showed up. And now they're trying to control everybody with their weird powers, and they're kind of forming a cult and shit like that. But completely unrelated story. And hi, I'm an actor who played a really small side character, and now I'm the main character, and we're going to try and fight these aliens. And it has absolutely nothing to do with the original show. Like, it was such a sudden turn that I was just like, Because I remember I would occasionally catch an episode later, and I'm like, who are these guys? Where's all the other people? Who is this person who's leading? Who are these aliens? This is a whole different storyline. And I thought, you know, apparently that's it. They were like, oh, yeah, after that, some shit went down, and now we're dealing with that shit that's unrelated.
Well, you know, for a time there, you had to do so many shows to get syndication deals,
yeah.
And it goes past four seasons. So they probably thought, well, let's make a fifth season.
Well, yeah, because it used to be 100.
Right.
Now it's 75, apparently.
Well, now it's closer to just being four seasons. It used to be that, like you said, 100, but in 21 or 22 episode seasons, that meant you had to do a little bit of a season
four,
5.
And an extra, yeah.
Not a whole season 5, even. No. Just a little bit of a season 5. So now they've changed it so that it's basically four seasons, which makes more sense.
Yeah.
But back then, I'm sure it was still 100 episodes, so they probably just thought, well, let's throw something together so that we can sell it syndicated to places,
so
but I've never heard it being syndicated anywhere.
And I mean, I know shows that retooled themselves.
Yeah.
Possibly one of the biggest examples being Baywatch Nights.
Well, I never heard of that.
You know what Baywatch was?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Baywatch Nights was David Hasselhoff playing the same character from Baywatch and a couple other people from the Baywatch show and a couple of random new people decide to open a side business as private detectives.
Wow.
And it was supposed to be the sexier version, which is why you hear it nowadays. That's the joke people make. They're like, oh, no, this is like such and such Knights. So like when Torchwood came out, they're like, it's Doctor Who Knights because it's like the sexy version.
Mm-hmm.
But what's funny is they had a season. I didn't watch this show, but again, right up. They had a season, and it was just a stupid Baywatch as detectives thing. And it was not very popular, so they did a second season that was a goddamn supernatural mystery show.
Mm.
Like, suddenly now, every episode, like, it was werewolves and shit.
Mm.
And not, like, debunking, right? Like, it was the actual things.
Wow.
Yeah. Kung Fu Legend Continues did that, too. At a certain point, it stopped being, like, street punks who were trying to mess up Chinatown, and it became like, oh yeah, this 3,000-year-old emperor's soul. And it wasn't, like, there was a break. Like, it wasn't like, occasionally there was an episode that was this. And no, it was like three seasons of street punks threatening Chinatown, and then two seasons of 3,000-year-old emperors. So I've heard of this before, but yeah, I don't,
so supernatural,
it always cracks me up.
So supernatural stuff is actually part of the Baywatch canon, really?
Yes, technically yes.
Hmm. I did not know that.
That's how all the slow motion running happens. It's magic.
Baywatch cannon.
Baywatch cannon. I just shoot lifeguards out at the beach. It was a very short-lived attempt to get lifeguards to drowning victims quicker.
Do you think there is anybody in the world who is concerned about Baywatch cannon? For real?
Oh, yeah.
You think so? Do they realize there's supernatural stuff in Baywatch canon?
Quite possibly. Baywatch, for a not insignificant amount of time, was the world's most popular television show. And I mean, I don't mean that hyperbolically, or it was literally, like, it was stupidly successful internationally. And I guarantee you there are people out there who have seen every episode 1,000 times and know all
things. And the plots were, and the story arcs were involved enough that someone would care about.
Well, they were dumb as shit, but people will still care.
You know, because something I realized.
There are people obsessed with shows that only had like 7 episodes. There are people obsessed with sitcoms that only had 7 episodes.
Something I realized when we were talking about space operas was the opera part of space opera is really riffing on soap opera, probably.
That would make the most sense, yes.
So we're talking about something that has an element of melodrama in it, maybe, or more or less. But Baywatch didn't have that, did it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, tons of melodrama.
Oh, did it? Oh, I thought it was
just a
really superficial and not very interesting, like, almost procedural thing.
Well, it depends on how you define melodrama. But no, it was people were dating people and people were learning lessons about growing up and shit.
Okay, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, no. All of that shit was going on. But people, just about every episode, somebody almost drowned and shit. Like, it made lifeguarding look way more important. And lifeguarding is important, but not on a weekly basis.
I guess I don't. That never occurred to me that that's what the opera in space opera meant. Because it was always applied to Star Wars, and I never really thought of Star Wars as being particularly. I mean,
very little singing.
Well, I mean, the
just that one jizz whaler.
The writing is stilted, but it's not really melodramatic. I wouldn't call it melodramatic.
You wouldn't call it melodramatic?
Not really.
The original trilogy could totally have been a couple seasons of Dallas, and it would have made total sense.
I guess.
In fact, it might have been a couple seasons of Dallas.
I never really thought about it that way.
Anytime you've got love triangles, anytime you've got issues of succession within a family, all of that shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe. I just never really thought about it like that. The books didn't seem that way either, or the games.
No, because that was not the part that people actually cared about. Yeah. Did you notice, and that may still be true this day, every sitcom that does a Christmas episode has to, at minimum, leave it ambiguous whether Santa is real.
That is kind of interesting.
Every single one, including ones where they legit debunk Santa, and then at the very end, like, the kids have gone to bed, and the parents are like, what the hell? And then you hear the jingle bells, and it's like, ho, 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 outside, and they're like, what? Like, don't tell the kids anything. And then the end credits, like, every single one.
Yeah.
I mean, in some of them, Santa's just straight up real. But no sitcom has ever had the guts to say, Santa's fake, the end.
American culture has a very odd relationship with Santa Claus, it seems like, when you think about it. Well, like the thing you just said. What is that about?
A lot of cultures have a weird relationship with Santa Claus.
It's a very odd
long-distance relationship. No, I think that speaks more to the fact that, especially in the 80s and 90s, we were all convinced sitcoms were real life. Because we did.
Yeah,
so much of American culture is fucked up because we cannot figure out why our lives do not get solved in 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many things, so many mental milestones we set for ourselves were based off of sitcoms and other TV shows, from how well the house was kept to parent-child conversations. Like, how many goddamn parents got their sex talk from an 80s sitcom that did a sex talk and were surprised that it didn't work out the same. Like, all the way going back to freaking Leave It to Goddamn Beaver.
I have to say, sitcoms baffled me quite a bit. We watched them a lot when I was a kid growing up.
I would watch any sitcom.
And it seemed like every single...
Until Step by Step.
Plot.
I think that was the first one that...
Every single plot revolved around somebody either telling a lie.
Yeah, that's common.
Or withholding information
yeah.
that they were afraid to reveal.
Occasionally, and this was usually on a very special episode, it would be holding a terrible viewpoint and then slowly learning a lesson about why that was wrong. But you're right. It was usually a lie or withholding of information. All of them. And I think because it fit the formula really well. First of all, absolutely creates drama immediately because everything's fucked up. And it's also really easy to resolve because you're like, nope, sorry, just kidding. Or actually, I didn't lose my foot. Actually, we're not married. Actually, whatever.
Actually, I didn't go bowling.
Yeah,
so then you can
resolve it real fast.
Well,
no, this is bugging me. Well, and I talked about this with writing. I'm like, I don't like making people that are like stupid or liars, but it's like you have to have a little bit of that or there's no conflict. If everybody's just smart and rational,
well, but see,
then they just talk things out and move on.
What baffled me about this was most of the time they'd lie or hold something back. There was no apparent reason to do it. I mean, the narrative reason was, oh, my wife will get mad at me. Mom and dad will get mad at me. But if you watched the show, you didn't get the impression that either anyone would get mad or that they'd get very mad, or that you got the impression they'd be more mad at you lying than at you
telling what was the truth.
And episode after episode after episode, it was done like nobody seemed to learn the lesson.
Nobody in the sitcom ever learns a lesson.
So
it's always reset to one in the next episode.
I was always baffled by this narrative flow of, okay, first of all, it doesn't make sense to me that they're not telling the truth. Because surely they can see, as just as I can, what the consequences of that are going to be. Then at the end of the show, there's some resolution. They forgive each other and they realize they shouldn't lie like that. But two shows later, they do the exact same thing.
Yep.
And I can never understand it. I mean, I was entertained by sitcoms and stuff, but I mean, I just didn't understand
it. Back in the day when television was episodic, not that it's not still, but I mean, narratively.
Yeah.
You had to do this, and this is why Trish used to get so pissed off about Stargate SG-1, because there are some important lessons when you're traveling randomly to different planets in the galaxy via space portal and meeting random civilizations, and there are things like, don't bring back plant life, don't eat the local food, don't have sex with the people you meet there. And yet, every season, all of those things happened at least four times. And there was a whole episode about it. And in some cases, they even said, that's it. From now on, we don't do this anymore. Like, it's a new rule. And then they did it, like, the next season.
Well, I think it's made me pretty intolerant of modern entertainment, where I think Game of Thrones, people felt like it was guilty of this in later seasons. Where it seems like the people making the TV show or movie, it's usually a TV show or movie that I'm talking about, not like a book necessarily, but
yeah,
where it's clear that the makers of this visual thing want to get to a particular set piece or want to get to two people having a fight or an argument or whatever, and they don't even get creative in the narrative elements they create to get you there. It's just, well, let's make up anything, any old thing to make this happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense. And I find that very disappointing, and it makes me really not even care about what's going on.
I'm telling you, a great way to watch a lot of TV these days, pretend it's a role-playing game.
Well, that's funny you should say that.
I do this constantly with mediocre sci-fi and horror, and it's wonderful.
Because one of the things that I think about Game of Thrones is it feels to me like the author... What's his name? The author's name?
George Martin.
Yeah. It feels like he had a really long and involved D&D campaign once and thought this would make a great book. And he changed it a little bit, you know, because he wasn't going to make it a D&D thing. And he created this thing. And, you know, I've done some role-playing in the last few years. I enjoy it. But just like I understand, you can't take a book and turn it into a movie just directly. I mean, a film is a different medium than a book. A role-playing game story is a different medium than a book or a TV show or whatever else.
And
so
it's
not
going
to work very well to translate it into one to the other.
A lot of people don't know this. There are a few examples out there of people turning their role-playing games into books. Most of them are not particularly good books. But it also means there's an entire generation of nerds who, either think they can write a book about their role-playing game afterwards, or run a role-playing game with the intention that whatever happens, they're turning into a book. And that's the best way to ruin both books and RPGs in one fell swoop.
Now, you can adapt a book into a film. If you understand, I'm making a film, so I'm going to have to change a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I imagine you can also adapt a role-playing game into anything else. But you have to know, you have to realize that the book is going to be very different or the film is going to be very different. And I have a feeling that a lot of people who have the aspiration you're talking about to take a role-playing game and turn it into something else don't quite understand. You can't just do that.
Well, and the other version is, or they're not too terrible at writing and they're really shitty GMs. Because I've actually once heard of somebody writing a book, not getting it published, mind you, but having written a draft of it and then running a game based on it. So, like, they already had the plot covered. So I'm like, why do you have players then? And sure enough, I'm pretty sure, like, as soon as they did something that the characters in the book hadn't done, the GM was like, what? No, fuck, we're screwed. And yeah, it was a disaster. And one of my friends who doesn't GM, and who GM once, said that was her thing. She's like, I made this whole quest line and all this stuff, and then they wouldn't do the things I was planning on them doing, and I couldn't keep control, and it all fell apart. And I'm like, yeah, you can't do that. But this is what I like. TV shows, a lot of TV shows have just enough cohesion to be a role-playing game. Because in a role-playing game, you have a really cool adventure. And then hopefully it leads into another one where your characters grow and change and you develop relationships within the game and all this stuff. Plenty of melodrama, plenty of action, all of that. There's a lot of fiddly bits that you just kind of faked. Well, why is that person there? Oh, because blah, 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 history. Okay, and when you're playing, it's awesome.
That's right. That's right.
And if you go back later and try and explain it to people, you're like, okay, and this bit sounds stupid, but we had fun with it. And the TV shows are like that. So many of the TV shows, I'm like, it's really awesome in the episode. I don't like to sit back and think larger scale because it all falls apart.
Well, yeah, like, and that's the way storytelling in role-playing games works and should work.
But it's lazy as fuck when you're doing books and
TV
shows.
In role-playing, there's quite a bit of it where for anyone else, like you say, for anyone else to think it's cool, it's kind of a you kind of had to be there kind of thing.
Yes.
Because
and there's a lot of independent variables.
Yeah.
When you're writing a screenplay, the character should not suddenly do something you were not expecting as the writer.
Well,
and
right.
Then you're like, oh shit, they did that. But, I don't know how to prepare for that.
For a lot of role-playing games, you know, there's the story. First of all, it's so character driven.
Well, that, if you do it right,
I
think so.
Well, yeah, that plot. You know, you as the player aren't really thinking about how meticulous the plot is or how tight it is or whether
shouldn't
or not.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't be.
That's the GM's problem.
But so there are a lot of aspects of the storytelling in a role playing game situation that you just don't even have to attend to or think about. That you do have to in writing a book or writing a screenplay. And that's one problem of translating it over. And it would seem to me that, as you were just implying, if a role-playing game is run well, and then you thought, wow, this would make a great book or screenplay, that as soon as you sat down to do it, you'd realize there are so many gaps in things like plot or character arc or anything else that you'd realize it's almost impossible to do.
And character motivation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because remember the concept of metagaming and player versus character knowledge? Like, my character's going to go do this. No, you're just saying that because you, the player, know that's where the thing is, but your character doesn't know that. That's not appropriate. But characters still do it, and sometimes they don't do it intentionally, but it's still there. There are again, if you take this mindset with a lot of TV shows, you can watch and be like, yeah, that character clearly was using their player knowledge. Because that happened to be the thing that forwards the plot, but there's no way in hell they would have known that.
Right.
There's a lot of action movies and stuff like that, too. It's a bunch of stuff where you're like, especially anything that was a carefully involved plan. If you go back and look, you're like, there were a lot of random things that happened in that that you couldn't have known.
Right.
Unless you were sure that was what the GM wanted you to do.
Yep. No, yeah, that's a good point.
But it makes a lot of things more tolerable, especially almost everything on sci-fi. I love Killjoys. I loved Warehouse 13. All they work as a role-playing game. Supernatural, similar. Supernatural doesn't have enough connective tissue for me to be too bothered about plot holes at this point, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty... There's no real reason... I mean, I'm sure some people do it. I'm sure some people totally obsess over the show, but...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why you would, because it's just going to frustrate you.
Mostly because you want to fuck one or both of the Winchester brothers.
I see.
That's very much...
Well, or as I understand people it, you really want like you them. Want them to
or
do
to
that
do each other. Yes, each yes, other. Yes, 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 yes. It's
very weird to me, but and that's a very popular.
Get them pregnant.
That's a very popular.
And, yeah,
Slash, is that what it's called? Slash.
Slash, yes, is a particular type of fan fiction wherein, and it's actually a proto term before fan fiction really came around as a term, wherein it's focused on a relationship between two characters. So it would be this character slash this character.
Right.
I think originally typified with all of the Kirk slash Spock fiction.
Has it evolved to mean a specific kind of fan, like particularly between two male characters or
not necessarily no
or queer or anything like
not
that?
Not necessarily okay. No.
It just seems to be whenever I hear people talk about it, it's almost always in that context.
I think that's a very popular context. It's just those things. Like for instance, within Harry Potter fan fiction. Erotic fan fiction specifically involving Snape and Hermione is insanely popular.
What?
Particularly amongst female authors. And nobody's entirely sure why. I mean, people can make arguments for why they like it or don't like it. But I have yet to hear an argument for why that's such a huge trend.
Hmm.
But it is. I mean, there's lots of others, too. There is more Harry Potter fanfiction out there than J.K. Rowling could hope to write in her lifetime. And she's trying, goddammit. Fucking Pottermore. But, yeah, that is a very, 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 very common one.
Hmm.
And it's the same thing. Like, the guys from Supernatural together is a big thing. And there's plenty of stuff of them involving other characters or people writing themselves into stories or crossovers and things like that. But there's a ton of the two brothers just getting it on. As brothers, or occasionally as werewolves.
Well, I really hope you keep watching it, because this conversation we just had will come up.
And one of the most amazing, because there's a few places out there that do these things that like show you the truly absurd and crazy fan fiction. Not to read, but they tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the most amazing one I ever encountered was somebody did a million words worth of erotic fan fiction focused basically on Xander from Buffy and the old cartoon Biker Mice from Mars.
I don't even know what that is.
It was a pretty shitty cartoon in like the late 90s. That's exactly what it sounds like. Anthropomorphic mice from Mars who rode motorcycles and, you know, solved crimes and shit.
A million words?
A million words.
Hmm.
Just a lot of large mice fucking Xander from Buffy. Like a million words, I believe, 300 and some chapters.
Okay.
Like, it's... But then again, there's also Tetris erotic fan fiction, so...
I'm not sure I even want to know how
no,
that works.
No, you probably don't, but yeah, no. Good, it's good. No, some it's amazing just... crap out there.
Amazing?
I am amazed that it is there.
Okay.
It is to paraphrase Eddie Izzard, it is awesome in the traditional sense. That I am in awe and terrified as though seeing some sort of Lovecraftian space god. I can scream only in my heart, but I am in awe. Yeah, we should probably draw a thing. We're going to have to do a whole other show, so it'll be exciting too. If you want to tell us about your favorite, erotic fan fiction, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Or maybe send us a link to the fan fiction you wrote about when Jazz kidnapped Kit Harington. And if you haven't written that, write it. And then send us a link.
Craig wants to know.
Craig, our only resident Brit. Because Stu's Merkin now.
Given...
Holy, wait, we have to pause for a second here.
Okay.
Stu, who I'm learning was a pretty crap Brit anyway, but is a really bad American so far. I'm working on Merkinizing him. The other day, tried to sneak past me some goddamn Cockney rhyming slang. We were talking about some cupcakes in a different part of the building, whether or not they were okay to get, and I was like, they're in the main hall area. I consider anything like that fair game. And he's like, okay, we're in chat talking about this. I think I'm going to go half-inch one. And I read that, and I'm like, half-inch. And I was like, half-inch, pinch one. God damn. And I wrote, was that Cockney rhyming slang? He's like, old habits. And I'm just like, fuck you, dude. You were never Cockney. I would have made fun of you if you were still British doing that. What the fuck is going on? And you're American now. It's not okay. So when he listens to this episode, dude, you got to work on being more American. He did something else the other day. His language. Oh, that's right. He said, you all right? To me. What does that mean to you if somebody says, are you all right?
Well, it's a common greeting in some parts of the United States. Not here, though.
In the UK, it is.
Oh. I think.
And nobody's expecting an answer.
In some parts of the South.
Really?
Yeah. You all right?
Really?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. Stu, if you move to the South, that's okay.
But
otherwise,
not up here, though, people.
You can't do. No, not in.
How
no.
are you? How you doing? It's the same question, really.
But how are you, even? People still expect a response. It's not the same as hi.
Oh, yeah.
That's
well,
what I'm saying. They say, y'all right? And, like, clearly, like, you in Britain, two people come up to each other and say, you all right? And the other one say, you all right? And then they'll just have a conversation not related to how all right they are.
I think in the South, when they use it, they do expect some kind of response.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird, but also it's British, and you're not British anymore. You're American, so fix it. All right. Go back to what Craig had to say.
I take it you're not this insistent about any other immigrant who might still speak Spanish.
Or when Stu was Welsh, you know how focused I was on making fun of him for being Welsh. He's not Welsh anymore. He's American. So I had to switch it up. So now I just get pissed when he's a bad American. But also I try and use him as a British authority on things. And he never knows. He was clearly a crap Brit when he was there. I was asking him about a show. He's like, no, I was into the things. Now, if you'd caught me in this time period, I totally would have known it. And I'm like, that's when it was from. And he's like, oh, I don't know then. He sucks at this. But now he's American. And now at least I can teach him the right way.
If you say so. You just sound so right wing when you're talking about him being American.
He's gonna learn.
Okay.
America, fuck yeah.
He wants to know, given you are both writers, any tips on the editing process?
I'm in favor of it.
Should it be given that you're both writers, or does it matter?
What did he say? Given.
Given you are no. Both writers.
I don't know, but you know what? He's still British, so he gets to talk weird, and we let him. Stu pulled
tips
that shit.
Tips on the editing process. Here's something that is probably not even related to your question, but that I found interesting when I first started doing it. For a while, I wrote columns for the local newspaper. And they had to be limited to, I think, 450 words. And I also had a blog. And I got to the point where I would also limit my blog articles to 450 words, because I found when I did that and I was forced... I'd write some article that was 800 words long, and I thought, wow, this is great and brilliant. And then I was forced to edit it down to 450. It was a lot better.
Yep.
After I edited it down, I realized, when I think I'm being all fancy and smart by writing an 800-word thing, I'm actually being verbose what's another good word? I'm just liking to hear myself talk, I guess. And when I cut it down to 450, it's actually tons better. So... how does that translate to a book? It doesn't really, but it did teach me that, what's the saying? Brevity is
the soul of wit.
Soul of wit. And that's so true.
Or, as the cool people say, brevity is the S of W.
What? I don't know what that means.
S. Oh, so okay.
Why, but why
would
they...
You're shortening it because it's why? Wittier.
Oh, huh, funny. Okay, anyway.
Holy crap. The fact that I had to explain that joke to you, you have to go kill yourself now.
So, but, like, if you're writing a story...
Also, that was Kumail Nanjiani's joke. I stole it.
If you're writing a story, again, you know, you want to really ask yourself just how many words you really need in something. But probably the biggest challenge people have when in editing stories, and you and I have talked about this, is they write a little piece that they like, and then they realize it doesn't fit or it doesn't work, and they don't want to cut it out.
Kill your darlings.
But you've got to cut it out.
Kill your darlings.
Because
yes.
That's not just an issue of being, you know, of brevity. It's an issue of you just...
God, it happens all the time.
Yeah, you,
and it's not always like this bit doesn't like. Sometimes you're like, I really like this. It's not gonna fit here. I'll save it. Maybe I'll use it somewhere else. Sometimes it's like I have a really cool idea in my head. I have now written this 6 times, and it always comes out stupid. Like either I'm incapable of doing it right, or maybe it's actually stupid.
Well, for me, a lot of times it's I write this. Sometimes I'll write what I think is a great gag or a great bit or something super dramatic or a great moment between two characters, and then I'll let it sit. And when I go back and read it again, I'll realize it violates some deep piece of my world building that I can't change. I can't.
Yeah.
Sometimes I it's a minor thing. Maybe I'll just change the world building I did. But usually I can't. So it's like, this doesn't work. This wouldn't happen this way. They wouldn't have this conversation. They wouldn't have this conflict. So as much as I love this, I'm either going to have to do something else that's similar or serves the same purpose, or I'm just going to have to forget it.
And jokes so were a big one for me. There were half a dozen jokes in Odd Wings that I'm like, God damn it. Nobody else is getting this. Nobody else is finding this funny.
Jokes are hard.
But I'll tell
fiction,
you, if
hard.
I love it enough, I might keep it in anyway, because fuck you guys.
Well, some people do that.
But rarely. If I'm not going to do that with more than one thing in a book. I'm not going to be like, all 7 of these jokes are hilarious, even though you're on. But, no, this is a big thing for me from editing. Trick other people into editing for you. Mm-hmm. Have other people edit because you need somebody who's outside of your head.
Yeah, you've got to have
that. There's so many things that I'm like, this is clear. And somebody else reasons like, I don't get this. And I'm like, you don't? And then I explain, they're like, oh, well, that's not what you wrote. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a good point. Or they're like, but isn't that stupid? Or, you know, things like that. So absolutely get other people to read it and be ready for them to hate some of your best stuff.
And pick your editors, you know, when you can. I mean, pick people who read a lot of fiction.
I'm learning. Odd Wings is, by the end, going to have 20 editors.
Yeah.
And... Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates! ! Will probably have more like 7.
Yeah,
and they'll be the people that I'm like, I got good value out of
this. Sure, sure. You pick your editors. Pick people who read fiction, who read the kind of fiction.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good to pick someone who doesn't, just to see how they respond.
William's just saying that because he still wants people to let him edit things because he doesn't read fiction.
No. I have gotten value from people who read my stuff and said, this isn't something I would normally read, but this is what I got out of it. I mean, that's a perspective that I couldn't get from someone who does normally read.
Well, it's mostly people who can give you feedback that is both intelligible and useful.
Yeah.
And sometimes people give me feedback that I'm like, that's insane. And other times they give me feedback that I'm like, those are fascinating observations. I have no idea how I put that into practice. And other times where it's like, I really think that's just you.
Yeah, that's just your like, preference, and I just
want
to...
Out of all of these people...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that... And it's telling if somebody can't tell the difference. Because there are things... I've had to edit things where I'm like, I fucking hate this narratively as a reader. As an editor, it's fine. And I know the distinction. Like, this part of the story makes me unhappy. It's not a bad story. It's just something that makes me unhappy. And as an editor, you can't say, this part of the story sucks. Yeah. You have to say, man, this sucks, like, on a personal level for me. But it's like when you're critiquing anything else. When we, Trish and I, watch stand-up and stuff, there are absolutely jokes where I'm like, I did not find that funny at all. In fact, I was personally found it offensive. but I know it's a personal issue for me, and I will acknowledge that was a clever joke.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That is a funny joke that I don't find funny, and you have to be able to tell that in story, too. Like, this is a good chapter that I don't like.
Yeah, right, right, right. Well, when it comes to things that aren't fiction, again, you know, those things, not just like the column that I wrote or the blogs that I wrote, a lot of times when you're writing a nonfiction piece, it does make sense to limit, to decide how long it's going to be and to limit it so that you're forced to edit it, and also to get other people to read it who you think, you know, so they can tell you if you're making any sense or if you're rambling or whatever else. But, I mean, that's one of the, if someone were ever to come to me and say, well, if I was writing articles or essays, you know, what advice would you give for editing? And I would say, well, you might want to decide how long you want it to be. That seems weird to decide that up front, but it often can really help you make a good piece. Now, another thing about nonfiction editing that a lot of people maybe don't know if they don't do a lot of nonfiction writing is once you've done that, once you've limited how long it's going to be and you've edited it and it's a lot better, one reason people don't want to do that is because one of the things you edit out of a nonfiction piece is, like, you might anticipate someone's counter argument to what you're saying, and so you'll address it in the piece, and it actually takes away the momentum of the piece to do that.
Yeah.
So one thing you're left with after you've done all that editing is a piece that as you're reading it, in your mind you're coming up with counter arguments that you know you have an answer for, but that aren't in the piece. And you just have to be okay with that. You just have to be okay with the fact that some people are going to find those, have those thoughts, and they're going to put it in the comment section or something, and then maybe you can address it there. But you can't derail your point by trying to counter every possible criticism that someone might have once you've posted it.
And I don't think it's useful to be arguing with a hypothetical person.
But,
anyway,
you know, there's a
problem. Unless that's literally your narrative
device. There's a problem with essays online these days, because a lot of the stuff I read online that are articles or essays or whatever are long, rambling things precisely for that reason, because they're anticipating every little thing they might get in the comments and they want to counter it before they, you know, when they, as they post it. And it makes for a terrible article. Long, boring, terrible article.
Every piece of short fiction that I've ever had somebody read and give me advice and then I have gone back to work on it has included it becoming shorter.
Yeah.
Odd Wings is the only thing where it obviously has to be longer. But even then, within bits, I've shortened things and stuff. It's there's a stream of consciousness aspect to an initial draft of anything.
Right, right.
And you need to shorten that up, make it tighter, make it cleaner, so that you get your point across, because it's... Oh, sorry, I saw a shadow and thought it was a bug. My own shadow, by the way, but whatever. You need... Otherwise, people are going to drift off. It's your point is going to be muddied.
You're right about that. Short stories, fiction or nonfiction, novels are about the only exception to that, where it's almost always going to get shorter.
Well, and I definitely think there are probably people who write novels in such a way that that also has to get shorter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because in my... You and I both, by coincidence, and I didn't think this was true of me, but now that I've done this, we both tend to start... I think we both write sort of organically. Did you outline your plots first?
Very, very barely.
I'm going to... With Becca James Lowenstein, I'm going to take a very different track in how I do it, and there's going to be a lot of shit worked out before I actually write, in terms of the structure of the book.
Right, right.
But with this one, it was very organic, and I think we both tend to sort of write it skeleton-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
And in my case, like I said, sort of unconsciously, I'm like, yeah, just get the meaning down.
Mm-hmm,
I can make it prettier later.
Exactly right, yeah.
And so then you do have to get along. But I think there's some people who are like, no, I'm just going to write everything that I'm thinking.
Oh, I see.
And then you have to go back later and say, no, we don't have to know all of that.
We could take this whole paragraph and this whole chapter out.
Yeah, this
because
entire chapter.
Yeah, it doesn't really need that all that stuff.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap this up because we got another one to do.
Okay. I don't know if that was very helpful, Craig. I hope it was.
I
but I'm sorry
also
if it wasn't.
Don't know if it was very helpful, but more importantly, I don't care if it was very helpful because I'm a terrible person. But keep listening, and I will keep making fun of you. Or I'll just keep bitching about Stu every time you come up. Because you're now the good Brit. All right. The rest of you, write in to... Excuse me. To themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com with more stuff like this that we'll talk about maybe at some point. Also, keep listening. And... That's really it. Just, I mean, go live your life, whatever.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.